Good afternoon. My name is Celeste, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Umpqua Holdings first quarter earnings conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. I would now like to turn today's call over to Mr. Ron Farnsworth. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Celeste. Good morning, and thank you for joining us today as we discuss the results of operations for the first quarter of 2011 for Umpqua Holdings Corporation. In reviewing the company's prospects today, we will make forward-looking statements, which are provided under the Safe Harbor provisions of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. These statements are subject to certain risks and uncertainties, and our actual results may differ materially from those that we anticipate and predict today. We encourage you to review the risk factors stated in the company's 10-K, 10-Qs, and other reports filed with the SEC, and we caution you not to place undue reliance on forward-looking statements. The company does not intend to correct or update any of the forward-looking statements that we make today. With me this morning are Ray Davis, President and CEO of Umpqua Holdings Corporation, and Mark Wardlow, our Chief Credit Officer. Cort O'Haver, our Head of Commercial Banking, will join us for the Q&A session. A two-week rebroadcast of this call will be available 2 hours after the call by dialing 800-642-1687. This phone number is also noted in the earnings release we issued this morning. I'll now turn the call over to Ray Davis.
Okay, this morning Umpqua Holdings announced first quarter net income of $13.4 million, or 12 cents per diluted common share. This quarter's earnings are 65% higher on a sequential quarter basis, and is indicative of previous statements made by management that Umpqua is poised to make additional gains in subsequent quarters. This quarter's increase in earnings is attributable to several factors. One, a continued reduction in our provision for loan losses due to ongoing improvements in the credit quality metrics of the bank, including lower total charge-offs and another quarter of positive net individual loan risk assessment upgrades. Another quarter of strong mortgage banking results. A further 14 basis point reduction in the bank's cost of interest-bearing deposits. This was due to the company taking advantage of the opportunity to run off $160 million of higher-priced, previously acquired transactional certificates of deposits, while at the same time improve the mix of our core deposits by increasing non-interest-bearing deposits by $55 million. A 9 basis point increase in the company's net interest margin. Most importantly, as previously projected, a strengthening loan production pipeline that saw non-covered loans decrease for the period by only $6 million, excluding charge-offs. We look forward to reporting positive loan growth in the quarters to come as our pipeline continues to expand. And finally, the company also benefited from another quarter of decreasing total non-interest expense, while non-interest income made gains. The company's balance sheet is now the strongest it has ever been, which is represented by our total risk-based capital in excess of 17.5% and our tangible equity ratio over 8.9%. The company's capital levels continue to be stress-tested, and under adverse conditions, the company would report excess capital. This is the fifth quarter in a row of decreasing non-covered, non-performing assets, which stands at 1.53% of total assets at quarter end, and a balance sheet that can absorb another $3 billion in additional assets before we would reach our minimum 7% tangible equity level. Other highlights for the quarter include our continued organic expansion within our footprint with the opening of 2 new stores with another 8 either under contract or under construction at quarter end. Our announced expansion into the Silicon Valley market with another new loan production office and the hiring of another team of commercial loan professionals in the Walnut Creek, California market. A major event this past quarter was we established our new business banking division, which now has offices open throughout our footprint. This division will focus on commercial and industrial loans to smaller businesses, allowing us to serve these markets more efficiently and effectively. This group already has reported a growing pipeline of small business loans, which now exceeds $50 million after starting operations just a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to now turn the call over to Ron for his comments on our financials.
Thanks, Ray. Let me start at the top of the income statement, where we posted $106 million of net interest income for the first quarter of 2011 on a margin of 4.23%. Included in interest income was $7.6 million of accelerated discount accretion on covered loans from payoff activities, along with $1.3 million of interest reversals related to loans moved to non-accrual status during the quarter. Excluding these two items, our core margin was $100 million, or 3.98%, up from $95 million, or 3.67%, in the fourth quarter. This increase related to deployment of excess cash into investment securities in early February when rates were higher, along with a 14 basis point reduction in the cost of interest-bearing deposits. Our taxable investment yield during the first quarter was 2.97%, up slightly from 2.87% in the fourth quarter, related to lower premium amortization with slightly fewer prepayments on agency securities. The interest reversals accounted for the sequential quarter reduction in the non-covered loan yield. New loans are coming on at slightly lower yields, which should improve net interest income dollars, but have a slightly negative impact on the percentage margin. Bond yields are not expected to change significantly, as the current yield is at approximate market rates based on the collateral and duration levels we are targeting in the current rate environment. As for the cost of interest-bearing deposits, we expect further declines during the second quarter, albeit at a lower pace of change. Our weighted average time deposit cost in March was 1.34%, which should continue to decline with maturities of $725 million over the next quarter. All of this would suggest a core margin 10 basis points up or down from Q1. It's difficult to forecast accelerated payoffs on the covered loan portfolio, which results in additional discount accretion, so we're not going to do that. But note the $7.6 million accelerated accretion in Q1 and any future accretion are offset with the corresponding 80% decline in the change in FDIC asset line item in non-interest income. Additionally, given the rally in Treasury rates over the past week, we don't expect a significant increase in investment securities during the second quarter. Cash flows coming off the existing covered and non-covered loan books, along with the investment portfolio, will be targeted for increased new loan fundings during the second quarter, which Mark will talk about in a few minutes. The non-covered provision for loan loss was $15 million, while the ending allowance for credit loss was 1.75% of non-covered loans, which we believe is reasonable given the improvement in credit quality over the last few quarters. The reserve also includes a 7% general unallocated reserve. As conditions improve in the future and risk ratings continue to improve, we expect the general unallocated reserve to come down. In addition to the non-covered provision for loan losses, we had $7.3 million of covered provision for loan losses, which was offset by a corresponding 80% increase within the change in FDIC identification asset in non-interest income. This covered provision resulted from expected impairments above our day one marks on a few pools of covered loans, with the largest individual impacts from the Nevada portfolio. It's important to note we measure the covered loans across approximately 30 segments or pools per portfolio, and over the past few quarters, a few pools have deteriorated more than original estimates. However, the vast majority of these pools are performing better than originally expected. The original weighted mark on the covered loans at date of acquisition was 26%. However, as of March 31st, it is now 13% because of impairments recognized to date, accelerated paydowns over the past few quarters, and an overall expected lower loss level going forward for the portfolio on a combined basis. Turning to non-interest income, service charge revenue decreased 4% on a sequential quarter basis, reflective primarily of a reduction in the overdraft revenue component from $3.4 to $3.1 million. For comparison purposes, year over year, the overdraft component declined $1.6 million, or 34%, yet we picked up another $1.1 million in other service charges from the overall increase in deposits. Brokerage fees continue to reflect the positive momentum we have in this component of our overall wealth management group, with an increase of 28% over the same period in the prior year. The momentum in the wealth management division is building, with the overall contribution to the bottom line at $1.2 million for Q1, up 18% from the same period a year ago. This component of our business is growing well with a full product suite to serve our clients. Mortgage banking revenue was $5.3 million for the quarter on $167 million in closed loan volume. This is a 52% increase in revenue on a 31% increase in volume over the prior year. The growth initiatives in the mortgage group continue to position us well for increased new purchase business in our expanded footprint while refinancing slow down. Our pipelines remain strong heading into Q2. As discussed before, the change in FDIC indemnification asset was $1.6 million, driven by collecting more than originally expected on accelerated payoffs, offset by the loss sharing on the covered provision for loan losses and workout costs. Absent further covered provisions, we expect this line to turn to amortization quarterly, as the majority of the covered loan pools are not experiencing losses to the level originally marked, which will lead to increase in interest income. Turning to our expense now, total expense was $84.2 million for the quarter, down 4% from $87.9 million for the fourth quarter, based on continued efforts to gain efficiencies and control costs, while at the same time managing for continued growth. Included in expense was a loss on OREO of $3.8 million during the quarter, with $1 million of that loss for covered OREO and the balance for non-covered OREO. Included in other expense were non-performing asset workout costs of $4.8 million for the quarter, down slightly from the fourth quarter amount of $5 million. Of the total $4.8 million, $2.5 million was for non-covered assets, with the balance of $2.3 million for covered assets. The covered portion was offset 80% by the FDIC loss sharing agreement. The effective income tax rate was 33% for the quarter, which should increase over time closer to the 35 to 36% range as earnings continue to increase. As detailed on page 8 of the earnings release, our pre-tax, pre-credit cost operating earnings continue to increase, up 5% sequentially to $43 million for the first quarter. This measure gives a good comparison to how we are growing the core income of the bank over time. This number has the capacity to continue to increase from several areas, including deployment of the excess cash balances into investments and loan production, and deployment of the excess capital into organic growth and acquisitions. As for the overall balance sheet, we ended the quarter at $11.6 billion in total assets, with $5.6 billion in non-covered loans, $742 million in covered loans, and $9.3 billion in deposits. During the quarter, deposits declined at $141 million, or 1%, mostly based on runoff of acquired single-service time deposit customers, as we move to improve the overall mix of deposits. Offsetting the time deposit decline, though, was $55 million of growth in non-interest-bearing demand deposits. The unrealized gain on the available-for-sale bond portfolio increased this quarter to $43 million, which after tax equates to the $25 million in other comprehensive income and equity. As market rates increase, those unrealized gains will turn into unrealized losses, and the clutch is the duration of the portfolio and tenor of collateral purchase. Our purchases over the past year have been primarily in agency MBS and front-end sequential agency CMOs, off 10 to 15-year collateral with 3 to 4-year average life, specifically to limit option and duration risk in rates up environments, while providing cash flow on a monthly basis, reducing principal. As of March 31st, the weighted average life of the portfolio was 2.8 years, with an effective duration of 3.6 years in the current rate environment. That duration only increases slightly to 4.3 in rates up 300 scenarios, while the yield on the portfolio increases to 3.7% due to slower premium amortization. Several purchases made prior to the decline in rates were longer-term locked-out cash flow structures, which currently have significant gains as expected. Yet, at this point in time, given the high market prices with above-market yields, these same bonds carry a higher price risk in a rising rate environment. We will restructure this small segment of the portfolio in the second quarter to minimize the risk to future tangible book from a significant rise in market interest rates, targeting bonds with the most potential price decline in up 200 to 300 rate environments. This is small at about $150 million in bonds, and their sale will act as a hedge of approximately $10 million on tangible common equity in a big rates up scenario, and result in a minor gain in the second quarter. On the overall capital front, our total risk-based capital ended the quarter well over 17%. Our Tier 1 leverage ratio is 10.7%, and the Tier 1 common ratio is 13.2%. The total risk-based capital position gives us approximately $900 million of excess pre-tax capital above the regulatory defined floor or well-capitalized status. Our tangible common equity ratio ended the quarter at 8.93%, up slightly from 8.74% last quarter, based on the slight decline in total assets and the net increase in retained earnings and unrealized gains on the bond portfolio. We still have capacity for approximately $3 billion of additional assets before goodwill or future retained earnings. And our goal on the acquisition front is simple, to increase shareholder value. Our general thresholds are 15% internal rate of return or greater, being in a better position to deploy assets on day two. If goodwill is involved, a tangible book payback period of approximately 5 years or less, and any deal will be accretive to operating earnings. I'll now turn the call to Mark for comments on credit.
Thanks, Ron. Management is encouraged with the continued progress our lending teams made this quarter towards improving our credit quality metrics. While we continue to be focused on resolving our remaining problem loans as quickly as possible, we are devoting equal attention to positioning the bank for loan growth. As mentioned on our last call, we are encouraged by the large number of high-quality loans our credit executives are approving and feel good about our growth prospects for the remainder of 2011. Net charge-offs were $19.1 million, down 19% from Q4 and at their lowest level since the third quarter of 2008. It should be mentioned that over 60% of our charge-offs this quarter were centered in five relationships that have previously been identified as impaired loans and were not surprises. The $15 million provision for non-covered loan losses in Q1 was down 14% from Q4. The overall provision level declined in Q1 primarily because of a $5 million specific impairment reserve established in Q4 for expected losses which materialized in the first quarter. Loans upgraded during the quarter exceeded downgrades by over 22%. We did see a $39 million increase in substandard loans, which was centered in five relationships. However, we believe several of these downgrades are temporary and expect they will be upgraded in the coming quarters. Also, we had $9 million in upgrades from substandard, $65 million in upgrades from special mention, and a net reduction in impaired loans of $19 million during the quarter. Overall, classified loans have declined by 21% from their peak levels, and our classified asset to capital ratio at the holding company level now stands at 41%, even though, as we have previously reported, we remain conservative in assigning risk ratings, a fact which has been validated by the regulators on numerous occasions. Turning to past dues now. Loans past due 30 to 89 days at March 31st were $70.7 million, up from $48.2 million at 12/31/2010, but down from $80.2 million at September 30th. As we've commented in the past, our past due level tends to fluctuate from quarter to quarter and are not indicative of a negative non-performing asset trend, as evidenced by our steadily declining level of NPAs over the past five quarters. Also, many of the past dues were a timing issue, with $19 million of these loans brought current since quarter end. Loans past due 90 days plus finished the quarter at $6.3 million, down from $7.1 million at 12/31/2010. The majority of these are consumer and residential mortgage loans. Restructured loans totaled $67.5 million, down from $84.5 million at year end, and down 63% from their peak of $182 million at 9/30/2009. We ended Q1 with a non-covered, non-performing asset to total asset ratio of 1.53%, unchanged from 12/31/2010, which remains the lowest level in over 2 years. Non-performing assets include non-accrual loans of $136.1 million, down 26% from March 2010. As we have stated in previous calls, we have continued to aggressively charge down impaired assets to their disposition values. As of March 31, 2011, the non-performing assets of $177 million have been written down by 41%, or $121 million. Non-covered other real estate owned ended the quarter at $34.5 million compared to $32.8 million for Q4. During the quarter, we took 19 properties into OREO with a net disposition value of $9.9 million. 20 properties were sold during the quarter for a total of $5.4 million. We had $2.8 million in non-covered OREO losses. 52% of the total loss was centered in one property, which we sold subsequent to quarter end. At March 31st, our total non-covered loan portfolio stood at $5.6 billion. Of this, commercial real estate was $3.5 billion, commercial was $1.2 billion, residential real estate was $533 million, and $367 million was in construction, which has decreased 34% over the past year. Of the $367 million in total construction loans, $235 million are commercial construction, and $132 million are residential development. Within the residential development segment, balances are down $70 million, or 35% from March 31, 2010. $98 million of the total $132 million in residential development loans are performing, and of this amount, $73 million are already adversely classified with significantly higher reserves. Residential development loans now make up only 2% of our total loan portfolio, which is down from 16% at its peak in 2006. Now, some statistics regarding our permanent commercial real estate portfolio, which continues to perform well. Of the total, $1.2 billion, or 34%, are owner-occupied loans. The remaining $2.3 billion are non-owner-occupied deals. Past dues in this portfolio as of March 31st were $33 million, or 0.94%, with non-performing loans of $55 million. As mentioned on previous calls, 75% of the commercial real estate portfolio does not mature for 4 years or more. During the first quarter, we completed yet another round of stress testing in the investor commercial real estate portfolio, which confirmed the portfolio was very resilient with regards to rising capitalization and interest rates and or decreased levels of net operating income. Now to comments regarding our loan growth initiatives. Our new business banking division announced in March has established fully staffed offices in the metro markets of Puget Sound, Portland, Eugene, Sacramento, and the San Francisco Bay Area. This division will handle commercial loan requests from small to medium-sized businesses. Our international banking division has been instrumental in assisting our commercial teams acquire new relationships and has reported an 80% increase in revenues from the same period a year ago. We've continued to add professional staff to markets with the most potential for loan growth, which include Puget Sound, Portland, and the greater San Francisco Bay Area. These resource additions have continued into the second quarter with the announcement of our new C&I team of loan professionals in Walnut Creek, California. These strategic hires have aided us in growing our overall loan pipeline to over $1.7 billion, the highest it has been in years. And continuing a trend established several quarters ago, loan production is rapidly beginning to catch up with loan runoff, with total loans down less than $6 million from Q4, excluding charge-offs. We expect this positive trend to continue. New loan production in Q1 for commercial banking was $318 million, which equates to $1.2 billion annualized, a 75% increase from the full year 2010. This production is the highest it has been for the last six quarters, with 49% being C&I loans. We anticipate that total C&I production for the year to be the highest in the history of the company. During this past quarter, non-covered C&I loan totals experienced net growth by $14.6 million, and in the first few weeks of April, this trend has continued with C&I loans up $23 million from quarter end. We currently have approximately $588 million in unused commercial loan commitments. As economic conditions improve, we fully expect utilization levels in this area to increase, providing additional incremental loan growth. I will now turn the call over to Ray for closing comments.
Okay. We are encouraged and feel that net non-covered loan production gains will soon be reported as we turn net loan growth into a reality. Loan production will continue to be a major focus of the company. Regarding merger and acquisitions, As Ron has commented, we will remain disciplined and yet opportunistic as transactions are presented. Even though the company's performance this past quarter was good and trends look favorable, we realize we still have work to do to improve earnings, continue to lower our NPA levels, reduce our workout costs, and of course deal with the regulatory headwinds that our industry faces. That being said, the company's culture continues to strengthen and our organic expansion is moving forward. We will now take your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star one to ask a question. Your first question will come from the line of Joe Morford with RBC Capital Markets.
Hi, good morning.
Hey, Joe.
Good morning, Joe.
I guess, Ray, I'd be just curious, if you could just, looking across your regional footprint, can you kind of broadly talk about some of the economic trends in the different regions and what markets are still weak and still seeing some credit deterioration and where are you more optimistic about, you know, this growth you're expecting loans and deposits?
No, Joe, I think if you look at the major markets, which is where most of our growth is coming from, you know, Puget Sound has been, outstanding market for us, and the entry into Puget Sound, I think the timing was, couldn't have been much better. So that is performing extremely well. The greater San Francisco Bay Area, another market that we've added resources, which continues to add volume. Portland, in fact, is doing very well. I'd say of all the markets we have, that the weakest clearly is still in the greater Sacramento market. I think we've got a handle about, you know, I don't think we have deterioration, further deterioration there. I think we know what we have, first of all. I think that's pretty clear. And I think things are beginning to stabilize faster than perhaps they had in previous quarters. But Sacramento is still the weakest market. But I will tell you, even though it's weak, we're still getting a look at some incredibly good, strong credits, which we're taking advantage of.
Okay, and I guess more specifically, just following up on your comments about Seattle, can you talk a little bit more about the build-out there and kind of how big are the footings there and kind of what growth expectations do you have for the year ahead?
Okay, our total footings and loans today are about $125 million up in the greater Puget Sound area. You know, that's we've only been up there about a year, so, I mean, that's significant for us. We're very, very pleased with that. And the pipeline is full. I mean, I think our team up there has done a fantastic job. So, we're bullish on our prospects for loan growth.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Ray.
Your next question comes from the line of Matthew Clark with KBW.
Hey, Matt.
Can you first maybe touch on C&I stuff that you might be adding? Can you give us a sense for the how you're going about winning that business, and what the average loan size might be in that portfolio relative to what you're putting on?
Matt, this is Cort, head of commercial banking. The majority of C&I loans we're winning based on providing all the products and services of our bigger competitors. Our market advantage in all of our markets is that we are a viable alternative to the bigger banks. So a lot of our new loan growth in C&I are good quality middle market C&I deals with good companies that have weathered the storm over the last 3-4 years. You know, particular industries that are still strong. Ag is still extremely strong in our Northern California markets. And we're seeing a lot of manufacturing and service-related companies up in the Puget Sound market.
Okay, and then just on the average loan size, just curious, there's obviously a growing sense that it's become a lot more competitive on the larger loan size. I'm just curious what your average loan size is on the current book relative to what you're putting on.
You know, I would say our average commercial loan size is probably $3 to $5 million on a commitment basis. You know, and when you get into the smaller markets, obviously that particular commitment amount goes down slightly. But our newer commercial loans are probably in that $3 to $5 million.
Okay. And on the legacy stuff?
Our legacy loan portfolio has an average deal size smaller than that, probably, I would say, under $2 million. Once again, it kind of varies based on market to market, but a little smaller average loan size on the commercial loan front.
Okay, great. And then just finally, overall reserves, coming down with the improvement in the credit picture. Just curious about your comfort level with on reserves and how low that could go or where it might stabilize.
Matt, this is Ray. It's a formula. It's formula based, so it will be what it will be. I don't know where it stabilizes, to be honest with you. As we mentioned in our comments, we still have 7% in unallocated portion of our reserve today. We are not anxious to see our earnings go up because we're bleeding reserves. That is not the intent of management, nor have we done that. But it's really the decisions on the reserve has, for the most part, been taken off the desk of management. It really is a formula-based program. One thing I will say, though, is this, and I know you're aware of it, but I think it's important to restate. When you look at Umpqua Bank and you compare us to the Northwest peers, Northwest peer average, I'm guessing, is in the high 2%, maybe low 3% on the reserve. And the major reason for that is they still sustain the impairments in the loan portfolio in their non-performing assets, which, from our point of view, really artificially inflates the reserve to what it really should be. As you know, at Umpqua, when a loan is impaired, we charge it off immediately. So our reserve, when you compare it to banks in this region, for most of the banks anyway in this region, it's going to be, from a percentage point of view, lower, but our non-performing asset ratio is probably going to be 5 times lower.
Right, understood. I'm just curious you obviously have a view on where you think, where you're comfortable with capital ratios in this new regulatory environment. I was just curious, even if you make that adjustment for the marks you've taken on your non-accruals, you can gross it up to say, is 175 the new, with a grossed up, reserve, is that the new normal? Is it 2%? I guess I'm trying to get more towards that view.
As Ray just talked about, that's going to be based on the quality of the portfolio and the risk ratings of the portfolio. I would like to assume that over time, as the portfolio trends continue to improve, as those risk ratings continue to migrate in the good direction, you're going to see a lower reserve. It's not driven by us picking a percentage that we want to have for our reserve. So we don't pick 175. It's just more of an outcome based off the quality of the portfolio.
Understood. Okay, thanks.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Brett Rabatin with Stern AG.
Hi, guys. Good morning.
Brett.
I wanted to get some color, if I could, around the debt capital markets group in terms of if that's a service that you're providing as an adjunct to clientele, or if that's something you specifically expect to help drive fee income. If you could give us some color around the implications of that group adding EPS this year or next year, that would be much appreciated.
Hi, Brett. Court. Yeah, our debt capital markets group was really put into effect January 1st of this year. We've hired two professionals to run that group, and the two major products that we offer are syndications, participations, and agency-related services. And we also rolled out a swap product in the first quarter of this year that we offer to customers. Both of those two particular products are kind of working their way through the sales force. I would say in the first quarter of this year, our agency services provided us through that product an additional $80 million in commercial loans that we would not have otherwise gotten by being an agent. And we've seen good sell-through, and we're getting a lot of good looks on our swaps, and we expect a lot of good performance out of that swap group throughout the balance of the year.
Okay. And wanted to follow back up on this, the loan portfolio growth and the sort of the net versus the gross. And obviously you're seeing some positives on the C&I side, but I also noticed that this quarter the owner-occupied commercial real estate portfolio also increased. Can you give us a flavor for net versus gross loans this year, and then maybe some color around line utilization and where you are maybe versus a quarter or two ago?
Brett, this is Mark. We continue to see fairly low utilization levels on our lines of credit. As we mentioned on the call, we have $588 million of committed but undrawn lines right now. And we view that as being a symptom of or part of the economy. Once things start to improve and people start to expand their businesses again. We view that as being another adjunct to our loan growth initiative. So that's one thing. I think what you're seeing on the owner-occupied CRE is part of our strategy on the C&I side. As we bring in C&I credits, we're getting opportunities to look at owner-occupied office buildings or warehouses housing these C&I clients. So that's another part of our strategy, is to try to increase our owner-occupied portion of the portfolio vis-a-vis our investor portfolio.
Okay.
Did I answer it, or did you have another part of that?
Well, if you wanted to, Mark, maybe give a little more flavor around just expectations. I mean, are we talking the loan portfolio can grow single digit this year, or are you guys more optimistic than that?
You know, I think I'll let Ray and jump in, or Court jump in, but I think, as we mentioned on the call, that we are very optimistic. Our pipeline is $1.7 billion. As we mentioned, we are only down $6 million this quarter, excluding charge-offs. We have the $588 million of undrawn commercial commitment. We're very optimistic about our prospects for loan growth this year.
Okay, great. Thanks for the color.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Jeff Rulis with D.A. Davidson.
Hey, Jeff.
Morning. Hey.
Jeff.
Ray, a quick question on sort of the M&A front. Heard from some other calls about struggling banks, finding their footing and perhaps now increasing their expectations on perhaps potential takeout valuations. Is that something you're hearing in your discussions or not?
Well, Jeff, I think we've always heard that forever. I mean, let's face it, everybody thinks they're worth more than they perhaps really are. I wouldn't say that we've heard that or seen that dramatic movement in that. I think the real world is everybody's fighting for the new normal. What is the price? And the banks that are weak, and what I mean by that, I mean that are, perhaps they make it through this tough period, but at the end of the day, they really just don't have the capital nor the earnings power to enhance the value of the corporation or to grow it. And I have said publicly that those institutions would be doing their shareholders a great service by seeking out balance sheets that they can benefit from and getting on the top of the dance card versus the last dance. I think that helps them. But I don't think we've seen. I would say this. I think it is a little bit surprising to me to see some of the prices that some of the private equity people have thrown on the table for some of these institutions, which, in our opinion, have no franchise value at all.
Okay, and so I guess just circling back, the valuation expectations out there, as much as you can tell, it's a tough number to gauge, but has it changed much, I guess, in the last quarter or so?
No.
Okay. And then just one follow-up on the credit side. I guess if you've had more extended history with restructured loans now, any thoughts to that approach as a whole? Has it been effective? Do you think that balance continues to shrink? Any commentary on the restructured front would be helpful.
Okay, Jeff, this is Mark. Yes, we've changed our philosophy on that. We have not originated very few new restructures for probably the last 3-4 quarters. That's a function, I think, of a lot of things, primarily general improvement in the economy, not as many borrowers asking for restructures. We just don't view it as being a viable an alternative, although, we still have a good portion of our $67 million that we have remaining in the restructured category. We anticipate that those borrowers will eventually come out of this and be okay. It's not something that we're actively involved in right now. We're just not doing a whole lot of them. It's so I would expect that you will continue to see those balances decline.
Okay. Thanks for the thoughts.
Your next question comes from the line of Steven Alexopoulos with J.P. Morgan.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Steve.
Good morning, Steve.
Maybe I'll start on the loan growth, stick with the theme. Couple of things. The drag on total loans is still the construction balances. Just curious, where do you see the 300 $7 million balance bottoming out? Maybe I'll start there.
That's a good question. I think we might be getting close on the commercial construction side. You know, you're going to continue to see our residential development credit balance decline, but we are starting to see some construction opportunities in the stronger portions of our footprint, most notably the Puget Sound for multifamily. You don't see it in the totals yet, but we're reviewing those opportunities now. We've actually approved a few of those credits. You'll probably start to see those balances start to draw up over the next couple of quarters. So, you know, I'm not sure where we're going to bottom out, but we're probably pretty close.
Helpful. And then on the C&I, the tone and outlook on C&I has done a pretty sharp reversal from last quarter. Have the markets changed that quickly?
Hi, this is Cort. I think it's partly due to the fact that we're in some high-growth markets and we've got new teams and they're starting to hit their strides. So in the Puget Sound, really those lending teams up there really only got at it mid-year of last year. So now they're starting to get a lot of great looks. We are seeing some growth, a little more bullish attitudes on behalf of potential customers in the Bay Area, specifically in the Puget Sound. And so we're getting a lot of looks. You know, applications are up really dramatically, and you can see that in our pipeline numbers. So I think it's a combination of people that are now up and running, and there is seem to be some steam in the economy.
Hey, Steve, this is Ray. I just want to say one thing about your comment about the change. We haven't seen that big a change. In fact, if you look back at the calls, the last two or three calls, what we've tried to project on the calls previously is that, you know, we're building momentum early in the game to come out of this period, obviously, as fast and as quick as we possibly can. But I think if you look back, our C&I prospects for the last couple of quarters were also very, very good. We knew what we were building, as Cort just mentioned. It was a matter of time, as we stipulated on the calls, that once these people are up and running, these are incremental resources in new markets that we believe are going to bring, we know they're going to bring totals to us. And we're just now, as Cort just mentioned, beginning to see it. But no big change.
Yeah, that's helpful. I guess it's just taking form a little quicker, which is a good thing.
It's taking form fast. We're running very, very nicely.
How does that $1.7 billion pipeline compare to last quarter?
We were at $1.575 billion last quarter, so we're up about $125 million. So good progress there. Good progress there.
So maybe just one final one, maybe for Ron on the margin. Yeah. If we look at the NIM at 3.98, taking out some of those adjustments, should we be thinking about the NIM more in the 4% range here for 2Q, or given your comments that loans going on are at a tighter spread than what's coming off, should we expect to see some pressure on that?
You know, my comment was probably within 10 basis points up or down, so that would put you, for 3.98, that'd be 408 to 3.88.
Okay, so it's off that
in that range,
okay.
On the core side. And, you know, there most likely will continue to be accelerated payoffs on covered loans with some of that accretion, but we'll always report the core margin. And that's what I'm focused on.
Okay. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star one. Your next question will come from the line of Chris Stolpin with Raymond James.
Good afternoon.
Good morning, Chris.
Hi. I believe you mentioned that you had roughly $318 million in commercial loan productions in the quarter, if that's correct. And what was it the prior quarter or last quarter?
Last quarter, I think we were at $175 million. That's off the top of my head. Last year, we did about $740 million in new loan commitments.
For the year.
Okay, that's for the year.
Yes.
Okay. And just one housekeeping question more than anything. I think your press release indicates that a mortgage servicing right balance is approximately $15.5 million. Do you categorize that asset within tangible assets, or do you exclude it from tangible assets?
That is a tangible asset.
You include it as a tangible asset. Okay. All right. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that's star one.
Okay, Celeste.
And we have no further questions at this time.
Excellent. All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for their interest in Umpqua Holdings and their attendance today. Have a good day. This will complete the call.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's call. You may now disconnect.